Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, it is a Wednesday. Oh, I just can't believe how good this show is. It's The Herd, live in L.A., wherever you may be, however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, Joel Klatt, Greg Olson, Nick Wright, Joy Taylor. Nothing but goodness today. Plus, The Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. You know, it's one of those things. I shouldn't say this because our bosses may be taping the show.
Okay.
But. Our show is so fun during the football season, and it's easier.
It is easier, yes.
And I'm not above easy.
I was talking about our time doing the show at home and how you and I did 3 hours of sports radio and television 5 days a week with no sports for 4 months.
It was arm wrestling for hours every day.
People ask me, like, what do we talk about? I'm like, I honestly blacked out. I don't know. We made it through.
So we're so glad to have everybody back. And I want to start the show today with my staff wants me to lead with the Aaron Rodgers story. And I'm over him. He's needy. I'm not into needy people. And I don't want to lead with Aaron Rodgers today. He's talking. I'll probably at some point do it. I'm not leading with that today. I like my lead to my show to have a message. And today's message is, the highest compliment that I give my two biological kids is the expectation of high achievement. I expect achievement from my two kids. If they were a couple of mouth breathers, I wouldn't care. They are really smart, much smarter than me, much smarter than I was. So the ultimate compliment I give my kids, I expect high achievement. You are capable of it. And this next segment is actually the nicest thing I've ever said about the Cleveland Browns. And it's the ultimate compliment in the NFL. Their fans probably won't get it. But I'm not interested in talking about the Cleveland Browns this year when they beat crappy teams. I went back and checked. There were several weeks last year I did not talk about the Kansas City Chiefs beating a bad team. It did not make my first 2 hours of the show. Of course they beat bad teams. They're the Kansas City Chiefs. Coach, quarterback, roster, skill people. So the Cleveland Browns were the only team in the NFL week one that had two top 10 offensive linemen graded. Top 10. Only in the NFL. And this will be a year of the Cleveland Browns leading and managing leads. I am therefore going to judge Baker Mayfield more harshly when he trails in the second half like I did this week. If you look at Cleveland's schedule, it is highly likely they will not trail in the second half for the better part of a month. Baker is going to lead because of the dominance of this offensive line and run game. They are going to control the clock. They're going to win time of possession 14 weeks. Folks, they led the Super Bowl champions by two touchdowns this past week, and they were in Kansas City. I am not interested in talking about Cleveland beating bad teams. Believe it or not, there will be Mondays I won't talk about Baker and the Browns. But what I will do is what I do with my kids. I hold them to a higher standard. I'm not interested in your grades in PE. How did you do in calculus? Because that's my grading scale. I didn't spend a lot of time last year at the end of the year talking about Brady and Tampa beating Detroit and Atlanta twice. I didn't spend a lot of time on it. So if you look, and I talked about this yesterday, the difference between great and special and a guy, how do you quarterback trailing in football games? Because that changes everything. Baker Mayfield, twice this past Sunday, had to throw. Last two drives he had to throw. Three and out, and an interception. That's what I'm going to inspect. This is the highest compliment. And why does playing from behind well, why does that matter? Well, let's look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year. They trailed 14 times. They won 9, lost 5. The year before, the Kansas City Chiefs trailed 15 times, and they went 11-4. The Browns trailed for about 2 series, and their offense stunk. And that's the difference in this league. I don't care how Derek Carr plays when he leads. I know in that last drive with 37 seconds, he made 2 huge throws, field goal tie, 1 in overtime. And that's the greatest compliment I can give Cleveland. I'm not interested beating lousy teams. You're so far beyond that. By the way, Mahomes in his career when trailing, and this is what separates him from the league, is 25-10. Baker when trailing is 13-24. There's no question Baker is a franchise quarterback. We're out of that discussion. But Baker wants to be a $40 million quarterback. And 13-24 when trailing, brah, just will not do. And that's why Cleveland hasn't signed him yet. And that's why Cleveland is waiting. This is a league of how do you play in the second halves, especially in crisis. Baker admitted as much after the game, admitted it. Games come down to 2 or 3 throws. And they come down to 2 or 3 throws in crisis, not in the first quarter. So, that is my compliment. We are out of the, is Baker a franchise quarterback? Yeah. Is Cleveland going to win the AFC North? Yeah, I picked them probably. Are they going to lead in 12 to 13 of their games? Yeah, maybe 50. They led Kansas City. I know they won't see this as a compliment, but I am going to put the inspection glass. I'm going to inspect Cleveland trailing because that's the stand. That's where they are now. How are they trailing? It's the only unanswered question. We know they can lead. We know they can run. We know they have the best offensive line. We know they can win the division. We know they can win the playoff game. The only thing now is Baker good trailing late because Mahomes is and Brady is. That's where you're at now, and it's not a criticism. My staff would like me to talk Aaron Rodgers now. I'm not going to. I can't do it. I'm not interested. I'm going to talk about it at some point because the sound's pretty good, but I'm my staff right now pulling out their hair. Uncle Colin, I am over high maintenance Aaron. And so I want to talk about this. So the Bears were bad in week 1, way worse than I thought they'd be. Matt Nagy had a very good September record. They were terrible. They played, they trailed 13-7 at half, then the wheels came off. And what do you do with Andy Dalton? What do you do with Justin Fields? Mark Sanchez came on the show yesterday, and he said this whole go back and forth thing is very difficult. Here's Mark Sanchez from yesterday's show.
These guys have to understand what their role is. It has to be clearly defined. Here's my example. Me and Brad Smith, clearly defined. Sanchez is our starter. This is with the New York Jets. Brad Smith will come in and run some Wildcat stuff. And he was highly effective with that. And it was great. And we knew our roles. We knew what we were supposed to do. It was clear communication. When they bring in Tim Tebow, it's different. Now Tim kind of wants to play. Nobody really knows. Tim's won a playoff game too. Like, is he supposed to start? Is Mark supposed to start? To get a rhythm with this back and forth quarterback stuff is really tough.
So you can make an argument, and this is a real thing, that it's time for Justin Fields, and here's why. There are 3 divisions in football. You know this, I know this, Joy knows this, Ryan knows this. There are 3 divisions in football that are just simply better than other divisions. The NFC West and AFC West this weekend went 8-0 with many blowout wins. The AFC North went 2-2, but Cleveland did have to play Kansas City at Arrowhead. Okay, so that's probably the toughest draw in the league, right? So we just know that the AFC West, Kansas City, Chargers, Denver, Raiders, I mean, even the Raiders beat Baltimore, they'll be a playoff team. And then we know the NFC West, Seattle, the Rams, the Niners, Arizona, those divisions are insane, right? Right. And we also know that the AFC North, Pittsburgh's best front 7 in football, Joe Burrow can really sling it, good offense. Cleveland's obviously outstanding. And Baltimore's a very good franchise, just having a cluster injuries. So we know that. So what does that have to do with Justin Fields? So what a boxing managers and UFC managers and promoters do when they find a really talented fighter? They give him tomato cans for about a year, 10 to 12, maybe 2 years. Go look at Mike Tyson's first 15 fights. These are first-round fights. Build up confidence, refine the skills, sharpen the tools before you put him in there against somebody that can beat him. That's what Dana White does. I got a star. I'm going to give him 5 or 6 fights. Then I'm going to slowly, gradually give him a – somebody can pop him a little bit. Let's test his chin. But you're not going to throw a guy out there against a Conor McGregor in his prime early and just crush the kid's momentum and confidence. That's what boxing promoters Bob Arum, Dana White, a commissioner of his sport, the founder, Don King, Al Heyman, all these guys do the same thing. You're setting stuff up. Well, Justin Fields is that young UFC fighter, right? Look at his division right now. I can make an argument that the worst division in football, and certainly it's one of them, is the NFC North. Lions, Bears, Packers, Vikings. Well, we think the Packers are good. Didn't look like it. But, I mean, three of these teams, if I said they didn't make the playoffs, you'd be like, yeah, okay. Justin Fields, the next 4 weeks he plays Cincinnati, Cleveland, Detroit, Vegas. 4 teams, 1 elite pass rusher. Myles Garrett. That's it. If you look at Justin Fields' division, the best pass rusher in Justin Fields' division is on his own team, Khalil Mack. And if you look at the schedule for the Bears, oh, the big pass rushes are coming. They play Pittsburgh. They play Tampa. They play the 49ers. Those big pass rushes, they're a-coming in week 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Could I make the argument now? If you were a boxing promoter, a UFC promoter, or a coach, this is when you give Justin Fields a little confidence. You get him out there. You let him play against very average pass rushes. You make him feel good about himself. Listen, this offensive line for the Bears is a work in progress. It's going to get overwhelmed by Pittsburgh. It's going to get overwhelmed by Tampa. You don't want to put him in that. It'll be able to hold its own against Cincinnati and Detroit and Vegas, maybe Cleveland, although I'm sure Myles Garrett will have a field day. There's an argument to be made, and I was an Andy Dalton starts week one, but there's an argument to be made. You want to give young quarterbacks confidence. This is why the Niners, by the way, with Trey Lance, are like, whoa, we can go real slow on this. I mean, we could play Arizona. Chandler Jones had 5 sacks. They play Seattle last week. They unraveled the Colts offensive line. 49ers, ask Jared Goff what that was like. You know, I mean, you start looking at now obviously he plays for the 49ers, but you start looking at that division. The Rams, Aaron Donald. You look at the Rams pass rush. You look at the Seahawks pass rush. You look at Arizona's pass rush. Trey Lance, we're going to give you a couple series. We'll get confidence up, put you in the red zone. Like, I get slow growth for Trey Lance. Justin Fields, I'd make an argument. Next 4 weeks, get him out there. Let him play. Let him refine, sharpen, get some confidence. Because this O-line is going to be overwhelmed against the teams in the middle and late schedule. This is the space for him to play.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Urban Meyer rumors sprouted up yesterday. Mike Lombardi, a former GM, had said he thought something was suspicious. He'd heard some things. So I made 2 phone calls yesterday driving around. One to an NFL GM with real insight, said no chance. And then I called somebody who's close to Urban Meyer's wife, somebody very connected to Ohio State University who talks to Shelley Meyer. You know, wives have a little power in relationships, generally decide where we're going to live, at least in my family and most of my friends. That's how it works. She said no chance. And then Urban Meyer this morning had to talk about it because it's a story. And here's what Urban Meyer said this morning.
Unfortunately for you, some rumors came out yesterday connecting you to the USC job. I just want to give you the opportunity to refute it.
Yeah, there's no chance that I'm here and committed to try to build an organization.
All right, here's 3 things to think about. And guys don't think about this a lot. Number one, his wife loves Florida. The kids love Florida. Wives decide where you live a lot. Wife doesn't love California. Wife loves Florida. They have a house in Sarasota. They love Florida. They love living in Florida. They love the beach. Urban's a very intense guy. They love the beach, the laid-back kind of nature of Florida over the intensity, the traffic, the people, 10 million people in California. They really like Florida. Number two, Urban Meyer leaving would be quitting on Trevor Lawrence. If you know anything about Urban, I don't know Urban that well, but I know Urban pretty well. He always has incredibly close relationships with his quarterbacks. JT Barrett, Dwayne Haskins, Tim Tebow, Trevor Lawrence. He's not going to quit on Trevor Lawrence. He's not going to put Trevor Lawrence through that. And the number three thing, and this is a real thing. I've worked with people in this industry who are really nice people, and I've worked with some jerks. But you know what I've never worked with for a long time? Crazy people. Nobody's ever going to hire Bobby Petrino. He's a crazy person. He, like, quits all the time. This would make Urban look crazy. I'd be quitting after a game? Like, literally after a season? Urban's only 57 years old. He has a chance to make somewhere between $5 and $10 million every year for the next 15 years. Not if he's a crazy guy. Networks don't hire crazy people. Colleges don't hire crazy people. Bobby Petrino's a great coach. Not a good one, a great coach. He's a crazy person. Having affairs with athletic departments, getting on motorcycles, getting in crashes, quitting jobs mid-season. He's a crazy person. He should be an analyst. He should be a coach at a top 6-7 school. He's a crazy person. This would make Urban look weird and crazy and untrustable. And he knows that. He's only 57 years old. Urban and I are the same age. I may go crazy at 80 when I can't, you know, when I'm no longer going to look for work. I don't want to be ever viewed as crazy at 57. And so, A, his wife loves Florida. She's got a lot of power in that relationship. Number two, he's not going to bail on Trevor Lawrence. He's not going to do that. He has, like, incredibly close relationships with any quarterback he ever had at Ohio State and Florida. Like, really close. Closer than any coach I've ever known. His offense is so quarterback-based. And number three, it would just be odd. And that's not a good place for anybody seeking employment anywhere to be. Odd guy.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Byer. We have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. Twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players' rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Byer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So the USC job, we already have names coming out. Eric Bieniemy, Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator. James Franklin's already denying it. Urban Meyer's already denying it. When people say, I hear this all the time from Southern football fans, USC's dead. It's over. It'll never return. One day the job is open. You've got James Franklin, Urban Meyer denying it. Yeah, I'd say it's not dead. Yeah, when that Auburn job opens up, do you have Urban Meyer denying it? Eric Bieniemy, James Franklin? First of all, USC was the last college football dynasty before Alabama. Ask yourself three questions. I'll keep them easy. Does California have a lot of good high school football players?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Is USC easily the biggest college football brand on the West Coast? Yeah, that's not close. If USC does get rolling, is it easier to go undefeated in the Pac-12 than the Big Ten or the SEC? Yeah, that's 3-for-3. Folks, Notre Dame, we all thought was dead. Last 4 years, they've been in the AP Top 12. They average 11 wins. And they have much more stringent academic workloads. They have a religious overhang. They're in the middle of nowhere. It's cold all winter. It's a small private school. There's three or four great states to get high school football players. Florida's probably number one. California, Texas, Georgia. USC, when they're rolling, gets 20 of the 25 best players in California. They don't even recruit. They just ask. They get who they want. Every position. When Pete Carroll was here, the linebacking core 1 year was so good that Clay Matthews couldn't start. He, the following year, was named NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. He couldn't start at USC. They had four NFL great linebackers. It's just different. This is no shot at the chicken wings places and car dealerships and sub shops in the South. YouTube is based here. Google is based here. Facebook is based here. Apple is based here. If USC gets it rolling, they're going to have 15 players in their program making $1 million a year in NIL. I know Earl's got a, he got a car shop down in there in Auburn, and they pay. It's different here. It's the fifth biggest economy in the world with all the tech places that could pay USC players millions of dollars a year, and they will when they get it rolling if they hire the right guy. Think about this. As big as Alabama is, they recruit heavy out of Florida. But everybody recruits Florida. Clemson does. Florida State does. Miami, Florida, Bama, Georgia, the entire SEC. As good as Alabama is. And Florida is a great high school state. Best 50 players in Florida last year. Alabama got two. USC gets 20 to 25 guys in California the minute they get the right coach. The best college football team for about 50 years in the sport was 1972 USC. Pete Carroll's best teams were viewed as some of the best ever. YouTube, NIL, Google, Facebook, everything's here. They just got to get the right guy. I don't know who the right guy is. They got to get the, and when they do, watch out.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Let's bring in the Clatster, Joel Klatt, the voice of college football.
What's up?
Great to see you. We had a very friendly discussion yesterday. I was eating soup.
You make me feel something, too.
You know, you do, too, with me.
I don't know if it's positive.
So, okay, let's start with this. I got very little tolerance for this. USC is dead forever. Brand's dead.
No. USC is a top three job in college football, maybe top five job in football. This is a massive moment in the landscape of our sport being college football. And the reason is because in the next 3 to 5 years, the Pac-12's television deal is going to get renegotiated.
Thank you.
And the reason the Big Ten is making the money that they are right now and the SEC is making the money that they are right now is that the cornerstone brands in their conference are at an all-time high. Alabama has never been more successful in their history than they have been under Nick Saban. Ohio State is as successful right now as they've ever been from a winning perspective. Yep. And at the top end of college football. Guess what that does for those conferences? It brings in massive dollars. Massive. There were 7.73 million people watch Oregon-Ohio State at noon, week two of the college football season. Ohio State is the Cowboys of college football.
Yes.
The Pac-12 and the West Coast, to a bigger extent, are desperate for USC to be the big cornerstone brand.
It's always been.
This is a massive moment of inflection for the
sport.
And
that's what I said yesterday. If they go small, I'm going to drive next to the athletic director's house and pelt his house with eggs.
You know, Mike and I have history.
Mike Bone, the athletic
Mike
director.
Mike Bone and I have a little. So I knew him. I played at Colorado when he was the athletic director at Colorado.
The biggest moment of his career. By far.
Oh, yeah.
He's never had a moment like this.
No, not even close. And he doesn't have a great track record of hiring coaches, by the way. This is not – listen, and this is – Mike understands that I'm about to say this. If I was picking one guy to make this decision for this institution at this moment in college football, he would not be on a very mildly long list. But this is the position that he finds himself in, and he's got to get it right. He has to get it right. He failed miserably at Colorado when he was hiring coaches. Yep. Okay, he fired Gary Barnett, hired Dan Hawkins. Fired Dan Hawkins, hired John Embry. Fired John Embry, hired Mike McIntyre. Then he was fired. The Luke Fickell was a good hire, but remember, a guy played in Ohio. It's in Ohio. It's a mid-major. It worked out, but it's not like he went out there in a national search and said, oh, I picked this guy, needle out of a haystack, in order to lead a program and build it into a national powerhouse. This is a massive deal, folks, for college football, and I think people that just pass it off don't quite understand the enormity of the moment right now for our sport as a whole.
I said this. we don't do car dealership. I mean, not against car dealerships. But the NIL is great. A lot of these, even Southern powerhouses. We got a car dealership giving a guy something. A sandwich shop.
Joe's Chevrolet.
Okay. YouTube's here. Google's here. Facebook's here. USC, if they got rolling, and I said to you, they have 12 players making over $1 million.
Probably. Yeah, that's probably right.
It's different here. The world's biggest economies are United States, Japan, China, California. Turkey, you know, then you go to countries. Like, it's different here. So the potential for USC is huge. So let's get to your list.
Let's start with the philosophy of what this has. And this leads directly into the list then of who you're going to call. Right? So today we're going to play here. If I'm the AD, who am I calling and why?
If you were the AD, you'd never return my call. So I'm not rooting
true.
For that.
That's true. By the way, that's 1,000% factual. Okay? So let's start with the philosophy. Okay? So I've got four pillars to the philosophy that I would use as the AD. The first philosophy is that...
guys that will make
right
you
now.
Say no.
Guys that will make me say no.
Okay,
so I got to swing big. The second thing that I've got to do is get a recruiter. The third thing I got to do is get a guy with charisma. And the fourth thing is I think it's got to be NFL DNA. Okay. Doesn't have to come from the NFL, but he's got to have NFL DNA. Here's the list of guys that I would make them tell me no. All right, Urban Meyer, Dabo Sweeney, Lincoln Riley, Brian Kelly, and Ryan Day.
Call him and make him say no to you.
That's right. And I'm not saying that these guys would move, or they should move, or they will be the next coach. But if I'm the athletic director, I'm the athletic director at USC. So I'm forcing them to tell me no. And in the rare 0.5%, 1% chance that Lincoln Riley or Brian Kelly says, you know what, I am interested, then I've got to vet that out and at least go down that road, because those guys are right now the royalty of college football. No, Nick Saban's not on that list because he's 70 years old.
He's not taking the job.
And he's not going to take that
job. Next round of calls.
The next round goes into the rest of the philosophy. Recruiters, charisma, or NFL DNA. All right, you're going to hear a lot of Matt Campbell and Luke Fickell. No.
No.
They don't fit at USC.
Nope.
Mario Cristobal is owning the West Coast. I don't know if he would leave Oregon
call.
Or if he would leave Phil Knight, but you got to call him because he would build a juggernaut here. Jeff Hafley, NFL DNA, a head coach at Boston College, and a guy that, in hindsight, was maybe the reason why Ohio State played such great defense in 2019. Eric Bieniemy, from Los Angeles, charismatic guy, a lot of energy. He's obviously got the NFL DNA. Josh McDaniels speaks for itself.
Interesting.
Joe Brady, the OC with the Panthers, won a national championship as an OC with LSU. Now he's there with Matt Rhule with the Carolina Panthers. And then why not Deion Sanders?
I don't know.
Hire a staff around Deion Sanders with a great coordinator, a great offensive and defensive coordinator, a great recruiter. I think he puts you on the map like you can't even believe at USC. Those are the guys that I would call. And let me just say this about the charisma aspect and the NFL DNA aspect. The charisma isn't that your head coach has to be the star of the team. That's a falsity at USC. Was Pete Carroll a star? Yes. Reggie Bush was more of a star.
Oh, he was, yeah.
Charisma means that you've got to be comfortable enough in your own skin to be a star and to have your players be bigger. That's what NFL DNA is, and that's what charisma is. Okay, so if you look at these guys that had success, and you and I talked about this today, and it makes a lot of sense. You've already talked about it. John Robinson, Pete Carroll, Jimmy Johnson, Dennis Erickson,
Butch Davis.
They all had NFL DNA. They didn't have to come from the NFL, but they have NFL DNA, meaning that you're okay coaching a guy that makes $30 million when you make $3 million.
That's a big thing. That doesn't mean they had to come from the NFL, but they saw the world bigger than insular college football. They liked the NFL. A lot of these guys, like Dabo, is not an NFL guy. To me, he just has no interest.
I don't think so either.
He's also a control guy. Love him, but that's not going to work in L.A. I said this yesterday. L.A. is not a place you can control. You can be Tom Hanks. Two straight bad movies, you're a bum. Just the way the city is. This is not a control city. It's are you hot now? Everybody's in. And that may last, like Pete Carroll, 6 years.
Yeah.
And then they move on. Like the city, nobody owns the city for long. Like that just, this is not, you know, Tuscaloosa. It's not what it is. That's fine. It's great. Not here. Okay. Let's go to this. Now I got a couple issues here. Ohio State now, how long, when I watched Oregon missing five defensive starters walk in there and push them around.
Yeah.
Okay, that wasn't, there's losses and there's losses.
That's a bad loss.
Okay, Oregon, from the soft Pac-12, missing five defensive starters. Line of scrimmage pushed Ohio State around. That's a problem somewhere deep in that program.
So I think that Ohio State has a lot of soul searching to do. I think they'll be okay on the offensive side because I do think that that offensive line will be fine. They've got serious NFL talent on that offensive line at Ohio State. The problem is on the defensive side. And Ryan Day has addressed it now, and he said, listen, there's going to be changes coming. I will just tell you this, though. It's not just Kerry Combs, the defensive coordinator. Although they definitely made some mistakes from a schematic standpoint, and they weren't adjusting during the course of the game. But the problem was the execution of their players. You talk about just absolutely like getting out of your gap as a linebacker, the corner not falling off on a crackback and becoming the support player. These are like 101 type of deals, and the players didn't do them at all. The safety took terrible angles. He was late reacting.
Oregon also looked faster.
They looked really, really good. I think that recruiting that Mario Cristobal has laid out the last couple of years has come to fruition. They weren't out of place. And then I think it showed up while they gave up 600 yards of offense. Ohio State had to work really hard for those 600 yards. How many times do we see Ohio State gain 500, 550, 600 yards, and it's easy? Why? Because they get big, explosive plays. The only thing stopping them is the end zone, right? The only reason they don't have 1,000 yards is the end zone. Oregon tackled them every time. There wasn't explosive plays. They tackled in space. The athleticism of that back end at Oregon, those secondary players, was crucial to the success of that game because they gained over 600 yards of offense but only scored 28 points. Why? Because there weren't explosive plays. They forced a young quarterback to keep snapping the football, and eventually he made a mistake.
All right, so a little worrisome. Sark, one game in. Sit down, quarterback. New quarterback.
New QB.
What do I make? I like Sark, but what do I make of that?
Interesting. I think that there's probably way more to this than meets the eye. I also think that when you've got a very thin QB room, which he has right now, really he only has those two guys, and you've got to keep Casey Thompson around. If he leaves for the transfer portal after the third or fourth game, you're screwed at Texas.
So the backup needs to start a little bit, get a little love.
He's got to get a little bit of a taste. And what better week to do that than when you get trounced by Arkansas and you can sit down a young kid and have some teaching moments with him and Hudson Card and then go with Casey Thompson.
All right, Oklahoma's going to beat Nebraska. That's your game. Here's what I want to talk about. They have that wideout thing, Penn State-Auburn. I'll say this, though. You media types, very hyperbolic.
You're not involved?
I am not. I'm not a member of the media.
No.
I am a judge. I'm the judge. The
rest, you are.
Yeah, I render the verdict.
I see.
On the silliness of Americans. I am America's honesty broker. So everybody in the media is like,
this is hysterical.
What?
Oh,
don't fax.
Gosh.
So the media is like, oh, it's a wideout. Penn State's going to beat Auburn. Homework, journalism. Last six wideouts, Penn State 6-6. Auburn goes in there and beats them.
Why?
Because the wideout thing's overrated by the media. Oh, it's so hard to play there.
No, but what about you just said Big J journalism. Tell me about Auburn. What about Auburn?
Better quarterback.
Bo Nix is a better quarterback than Sean Clifford. I think that remains to be seen. I think that Auburn is going to have a tough time moving the football because that athletic defense from Penn State is very good.
Talk about recruiting. Penn State's defense is fast.
And transfers, too. They've got a couple of transfers on that side. Jaquan Brisker, his game against Wisconsin was amazing, that interception late. So I disagree with you. I think that Penn State is going to win. I think that the environment, one, is a huge help. But what does it help mostly? The defense, and that's the strength of the team. Their coordinators, by the way, one of the best defensive coordinators in the country, Brent Pry, and he's going to have a plan for that Auburn team. Auburn has basically a mid-major head coach.
It was kind of a shot there.
Brian Harsin has worked nowhere except for Boise.
Everybody
as a coordinator or
everybody
a head
works
coach.
In Boise. Boise, every single coach I've ever
Everything
had wins.
Everything works in Boise. So where has Brian Harsin worked outside of Boise?
All right, that's fair. Listen, if I'm not a journalist, if I don't push back on some of these wild
That's not
opinions.
A wild take. That's
okay,
facts.
Here's another one. Let's circle back. I had a USC question. Hold on. Let me look at it real quick. Hold on. I had a USC thing I wanted to get to you. Let me just throw this at you right now. I'm hearing this. You hear this a lot. So, the media can be really soft sometimes, and it just wears me out.
Man, you're all over the media today. Go ahead.
Well, that's not my family. That's
I a part of the media?
I consider you a top
Wrong.
Analyst.
I'm an analyst.
You're an analyst.
There you go.
Okay. So
just wanted to say you were wrong.
Okay. Oh, you know, you fire Clay Helton after two games. This is classic USC overreacting. And my takeaway is, it'd been 6-7 years. Okay, they weren't getting better.
So well, you had to prevent what Clay was best at, just doing enough to save his job. Like, if you just keep them around, there's a chance they win 8 games in a row against this conference, and it's like, well, should we keep him? And, like, that's where we've been for 3 straight Decembers. Should we not? Do we have the money? Well, he's just done enough. You had to prevent that. And as much as this is an indictment of yourself as Mike Bone, right? You fire somebody after 2 weeks of the season, and you're basically saying, I made a mistake last December. I shouldn't have kept this guy last December or the December before that. But it's also an acknowledgement of, this guy's really good at doing the bare minimum to keep his job. We've got to prevent that.
Yeah,
got to get away from just enough, because that's not good enough at USC.
So the minute they had an opportunity, by the way, Clay's first game got blown out by Stanford. Clay's last game blown out by Stanford. My problem with Clay, nothing ever got better. They're just the same. They beat the bad teams, they struggle with average teams, and they can't beat the good teams. Now they can't even beat Stanford.
Just did enough.
Enough. All right, Klatt, very good. Nebraska, Oklahoma. What time's that game starts? A noon game.
Noon Eastern.
Yeah, that's what we do here.
That's a big noon. Have you heard?
Yeah, a lot of people talking about
big
it.
Big J journalism.
Great.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Aaron Rodgers talks to Pat McAfee. I know Pat, love Pat. He talks to him every week. NFL guys hang out. And Aaron, you know, puts this out there every week, and he talks, and there's always a comment or two. And but I spent so much time in the offseason talking about Aaron, I think it's boring now. And he's got a quality that wears me out, which is high maintenance, projecting all the time. Look at me, I'm over it. So anyway, he had a couple things to say. Aaron's got a real playbook on this stuff. Aaron is always deny, relax, no big deal. And then months later, Aaron controls the narrative and acknowledges, yeah, it was way worse than everybody thought. Like when he went to the Packers, went to the podium, and sat there for 20 minutes when he came back and detailed all his complaints the previous 6 months. It's deny. Then he can control it. And then when he controls it, he acknowledges, I don't like this, I don't like that, I argued about this, I argued about that. It's a playbook. Everybody's got a playbook. That's Aaron's playbook. So here's the first comment from Aaron after that ugly loss against the Saints.
A game like that allows all these speculation to come into play. Should we have played in the preseason? You know, should we have done this? Should we have done that? And we got to deal with it because we just got our asses whooped. That's fine. Right now, we're taking on the chin, which we should, and pretty soon it'll be flipped.
Okay, nobody's speculating anything. Nobody. I'm not. Nobody in the media is speculating anything. We are just connecting the dots. You know, media people are a little like detectives. We get sources, we hear things, we get evidence. You literally were at odds with your front office all off season, and you had the worst performance of any team in the league. You're a reigning MVP. You're in the NFC Championship. I mean, if Bruce Arians and Brady fought all off season, and Tom Brady had 3 points and looked awful against the Cowboys, do you think we wouldn't cover it? The ultimate compliment is, you're Aaron Rodgers. Of course we cover it. So nobody's speculating anything. Literally, you and Devontae Adams on Instagram put up the last dance. You're driving all this speculation. You're feeding the speculation. All right, here's the second bite.
And it was one of those days. You know, you play long enough, you're going to have one of those. We had one of those last year, too. So we've had, you know, a couple rough ones in Florida, unfortunately, but... You know, I got the few text messages that I did get went something like this. Hey, there was a team that lost 38-3 last year to the Saints that won the Super Bowl. It's like, oh, okay, thanks for that. Well, I don't know what kind of lining that is. You're just like, you know, trying to make chicken salad out of chicken shit there.
Okay, that's not analogous at all. Tampa lost 38-3 to the Saints. The Saints last year were viewed as a Super Bowl team, like a high-end team. We were in a raging pandemic. Tom had no camp, no practice. He was doing secret practices at a local high school. They had no preseason. he and Bruce Arians literally see the world completely differently offensively. New playbook, new coordinator, new coaches, new everything, new receivers. You bring everybody back. The Saints are at least in semi-rebuilding, and you were worse than Tom last year. Like, it's not analogous at all. Tampa losing 38-3 last year, and this Green Bay team all know the plays, all know each other. No division between LaFleur and Rodgers. They clearly work together very well. They've gotten the 2 years they've worked together. It's a perfect marriage. People are saying it's perfect. What Matt likes is what Aaron does. It's not analogous. Okay, it sounds like it, right? 38-3. This is not the same Saints team and not the same situation. So I'd like to say again, we're not doing anything. Aaron now has a playbook, and the playbook is just relax, deny, it's no big deal. And then months later, it comes out, often driven by Aaron's actual words is, yeah, it was bad here. Remember when he stepped to the podium? Like, we knew it wasn't great, but he stepped to the podium for 20 minutes and literally listed 10 players they should have retained. It was a laundry list of he wanted to help the Packers and overcome their mistakes. So this is his playbook now. Relax, no big deal. The media is making stuff up. Nobody's making anything up. Nobody's speculating at all here. This is what we do. We connect the dots. 14 years, 3 Pro Bowls. He was actually the first tight end in NFL history. In the history of the league to have 3 straight 1,000-yard seasons. Could have kept playing, but he decided I'm gonna go do broadcasting, and a bunch of networks bid on him, and we got him. And it's Greg Olson's joining us live. He did the Eagles Falcons game. Okay, I admit I didn't buy Philadelphia at all. I didn't buy Nick Sirianni. I didn't like his press conferences, and I watched them, Greg, and I was like, man, they are buttoned up. It turned my world upside down. And they got a lot more offensive talent than I think I thought. And that was my interpretation. I'm like, boy, they got good tight ends and these young receivers. If you didn't watch every snap, what did you see with that Philadelphia offense that you went, whoa, or it confirmed what you thought?
I think the best thing Sirianni did, and like you, I didn't know going into the game either. The weeks through training camp, you're reading press articles. Nobody played in the preseason. There was really nothing to base anything on. We saw Hurts play a little bit last year, but not the same system. The best thing Sirianni did, and he kind of told this in the production meetings, they made sure that the system they rolled out there in week 1 was entirely custom made to service all the things that Jalen Hurts does really well. And I think that in and of itself is the sign of good coaching, right? Sirianni came, he probably did things certain ways at different stops along the way. And he said, all right, I have a young quarterback. He's in year 2. He's made a handful of starts in his career last year when they were a disaster. How do we get this kid settled into the game, play to his strengths, protect his weaknesses? And that's what we saw. I mean, he was super efficient. His completion percentage looked like he was playing back at Oklahoma again. He's got some young guys on the outside that can run around, the tight ends. Listen, with that offensive line coming back, I mean, I think they're a lot better than the just absolute disaster they ended up being last year. I think they got a shot. I mean, part of it was Atlanta struggled, but I came away very impressed with them. I think they got a chance this year to win the division, compete with Dallas. I think they got a shot.
All right, so I always feel bad. Young quarterbacks inherit bad organizations, and Sam Darnold didn't have a chance. He didn't have a Pro Bowler in 5 years. And I watched him and Zach Wilson. Zach has got a lively arm, probably a better arm than Sam. Sam's a bigger, stronger, a little bit more of maybe a playmaker. What did you make? Let's start with Darnold. What did you make your former team, the Panthers, of Sam Darnold's debut?
I think he did. So I went over there a couple weeks ago just to watch training camp. You know, it's 10 minutes from my house, see some of the coaches and visit with Rule and Joe Brady and all those guys. And to a T, whether it was McCaffrey or one of the coaches, they were raving about Darnold. I mean, they brought him in. I think there was probably some apprehension. He's better than what we had, but, he had some tough years at the Jets. But I think for people within the industry that watched him, I think to your point earlier, he was really surrounded by a lot of mediocre players. And then the one great player he did play with, Robbie Anderson, ended up signing with Carolina last year. So he's back with him. He's in a great system. Joe Brady is an absolute stud play caller. He'll be a head coach here one day. But Rule and Brady and McCaffrey, all those guys, they said he's come in and he's done exactly what we need him to do. he's surrounded by a lot of playmakers, DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, McCaffrey's now back healthy. Get the ball to these guys. Get the ball out of your hand. Manage the offense. And I think through week one against the Jets, I think that's exactly what he did. Can he sustain that? Can he do that through some of the real competitive, you know, next week with the Saints or whatnot? I think we'll see, but I think he's a talented kid. And all the times I've talked to him, I really enjoy his personality. He's mature. He's smart. And the people over in Carolina love him.
So, you know, I watched Tampa week one, and, you know, a friend of mine who's in the NFL said, Dallas is moving the ball in these corners pretty easily. And I think to myself, you know, when you're world champions, you're everybody's big target. It did look like the Cowboys emptied the playbook in the first half. They threw some exotics out there, and that, you know, they showed you everything. And I don't know what Tampa showed you, but any concerns at all that Tampa, bringing back everybody, was in a fight for their life against mostly a bad defensive team?
You know, I think back in the summer, I think you and I actually talked about it. And, you know, my initial reaction is thinking back to when we were coming off the Super Bowl in 15 and we tried to just recreate 2015 again in 2016 and it didn't work out. You know, I think in most cases, bringing in some fresh, hungry guys that don't have a Super Bowl ring, maybe haven't reached that top, you know, brings you that fresh energy and whatnot. But I just think with Brady running the show and Arians just calling things how it is, there's no, you know, pat you on the back. Arians is the first one to call it like it is in the press conference. You know, he called out his running backs for dropping balls and leading to interceptions last week. But, you know, he's pretty matter of fact. I just don't think Brady allows it, right? So yeah. Even though I think they're more, though, the exception than the rule, I think in most organizations, bringing back 22 out of 22 starters would be, you know, maybe a little sign of complacency, but I just don't think anything associated with Brady allows that to happen. I think the second one of those guys thinks they've made it, he has amazing ways of bringing them back down the reality. And he came out hot. The offense came out hot. I agree with you. I think, you know, Dak and the Cowboys looked really good. They moved the ball, scored a million points and ended up losing, but I think they're going to find their way. I think they're better week one this year versus last year, I think is night and day.
Yeah.
And as we've seen with Brady, his teams just get better as the year goes on.
Yeah, by the way, Greg has the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Super Bowl champs, and the Falcons this week. So, I don't, you know, Joey and I talked about this all week, is don't overreact to week one. The Texans are probably not that good. Green Bay will get their act together. But I've always kind of had a belief, Greg, that football's hard. And Carson Palmer said this the other day. He said, playing quarterback's hard when your team's great and the opponent's bad. He said, when you're getting in fights with front office and dealing with that stuff, he's like, that is a lot. You know, quarterback's mind's going a million miles an hour on all these responsibilities. And I did think Green Bay looked like a distracted, disengaged team. Do I think they played hard? Yes. But you know, in football, there are just Sundays you don't show up. So you're not there. What did you make of the performance, the body language? They were exhausted by the middle of the second quarter. What did you make of the whole spectacle?
Yeah, I think to just accept that it had no impact on that result, I think is probably naive. I think they're, what is it, the entire reason? No, but it very seldom is, right? Anytime a team struggles or anytime a team finds a lot of success, it's very rare that you just put your finger on one thing and say, hey, we lost 38-3 because of this. You know, they lost by the amount, they lost by for 50 reasons. Now, can one of those reasons be the offseason, the way it went down, the speculation that Rodgers was gone, how some of the young guys? Absolutely. Do I think it's the main reason, the only reason? I don't. I think coming out next week, I think Rodgers is going to come out for blood. I think he's going to say, you know, he got a little humbled. I think he felt maybe a little embarrassed or whatnot. Just seeing him up close and personal over the years, I would be absolutely shocked. I'd bet my life that he's coming out in week two saying that was an anomaly. We ran into a little bit of a buzzsaw there. Good team, tough offseason, but all right, I got my groove back here now and I'm coming out ripping it. That would be my assumption just from seeing him operate. They're still a very good team, bringing back a lot of their key guys, but it all starts at the quarterback. I mean, that organization runs through him. I just don't see that level of play sustaining for him. I think he's going to find his groove here. And I think it's going to happen in week two.
By the way, one last thing. You and I have something in common. We both love Chicago. You were devastated when you were moved out of the Bears. I love the city. I love the fans. I love the intensity. And these fans want to see Justin Fields right now. And Andy wasn't very good Sunday. What would you do? You ran the team tomorrow. What would you do?
You know, I think what the number one thing you have to do is you got to pick one guy. I think if you as an organization, right, they see a lot that we don't see. And the fans there, they're passionate. They believe Justin Fields is their future. And I don't blame them, right? If I was living in Chicago and I'm trying to finally get back to our glory days, it starts at the quarterback, I'd want Justin Fields to play too. But the organization, for whatever reason, doesn't feel like their best interest, his best interest or the organization's, is for him to be the every down, every week starter. And if, let's just accept that as being the case. Then I think they just got to let Andy play. I think the business of Andy takes them down and then he comes in and does like a weird zone read, shovel pass, and then he's back on the sidelines. It's hard for Andy to get into a groove. It's really hard. That's not seeing the best in Justin Fields for him to come play one out of 20 snaps and do a trick gadget play. It's just, it doesn't work at other positions. We used to try to do it with Devin Hester and he would only come in for reverses and special trick plays. Like if you want a guy to play, they've got to either be in, or if you don't want him to play, they got to be out. Like I just don't love the whole back and forth thing, sprinkling in a play here and there. I think they need to commit one way or another. And I thought the point you made, I listened to earlier in the show that you made, if they're going to play him, they got to play him now. Because if this is one of those things that the season gets off to a bad note and they're going to make this change down the road, you hit the nail on the head. You don't want to throw a young quarterback to the wolves. Let's let him play against Detroit. Let's let him play against some of these pass rushes that he can settle in. You go down to San Francisco and you go down to New Orleans and it's a long day.
Yeah. Pittsburgh.
Oh my God. You play some of these teams and that's not that you don't want to be making your first start against Pittsburgh.
Greg, it's great seeing you, my man. You're just, look at him, slender. He's out there playing tennis, hanging out with the fam in the pool. You look great, buddy. Good seeing you.
Appreciate it, man. Good talking to you. Take care.